Good morning. Thank you for having me. It's a real privilege to be here, particularly on such a special day. You have to forgive me. I've got a bit of a cough, so I'll try not to cough and splutter all the way through, but I might need to just take some water at points. And also, I'll just apologise in advance for my children, because they seem to be making themselves right at home. But I know my husband would really love to be in the service, but it sounds like he can't come in without the little one wanting to come in too. So they're both very welcome. I think he's probably too frightened to come back in, but they can both come in. Yeah, it is a massive privilege to be here. I've got three children, actually, but one of them on Mothering Sunday didn't want to come with me. She wants to stay in our church because she doesn't want to miss out on youth, which I thought was really cool, actually, that she knew who was speaking, and she said, well, Mummy, I can't miss them. I mean, come on, they're amazing speakers. I'm like, yeah, that's fine. You just do that. Don't worry about me. So yes, my daughter is 10 and she's in All Saints, and then James, and then Isaac. James is 8 and Isaac is 17 months, and they're all very welcome to be in the service. And Tom is here as well, my husband. I've just emerged actually from a week without Tom while I've been looking after the kids on my own. He was on retreat in Feldebrennen, and I thought, well, how nice for you. of course, I sent him with Grace, and of course, he must do that. But joking aside, I've just done a week without him, and I'm now on codeine, so I really salute anyone that is parenting on their own, because I just did it for a week and I'm on my knees. But my church family has been supporting me this week. And I hope that, as part of what I discuss now, we can unpack what that support might look like for you in your church. One of the things that I've been trying to juggle this week is doing a radio interview, which went out this morning. I'm rubbish in the mornings, so it was pre-recorded, and it went out between 6 and 7 this morning. And I know that St Andrew's got a plug, so if anyone came to this service because you were listening between 6 and 7, you're very welcome, and well done. But yeah, I was speaking on BBC Hereford and Worcester about Mothering Sunday. It made me think that 2 years ago I did a radio interview for them. And the researcher rang me and said, I'm doing this piece, I'm going to cover different types of mothering, and I want you to tell me what it means to you to be a mother. It happened, it fell during half term or Easter, so all three children were off school. And so she invited all three of the kids to come into the recording studio. Now this interview was going to be live, this one. And she said, oh, it'd be really lovely, you know, bring the kids, they can chat live on air. And I thought, oh my goodness, actually I can't think of anything more unappealing than three children and live radio. At that time, James was 6, Connie was 8, and we'd just received a new baby who was 6 days old, because we're a fostering family. So, but as it turned out, it was okay. The baby slept through it. James waved enthusiastically behind the safety of that soundproof glass. And Connie happened to be at a sleepover, and the interview went well. But I kept thinking afterwards that I hadn't answered the question very satisfactorily. It bothered me. I thought, what's bothering me about what does it mean to me to be a mother? And I think the problem that I felt with that question was that it sounded so self-centered. As a consumer, if you like. So I've been, I'm a bit of a pedant when it comes to grammar and language. And so it was lovely to see that you, used Mothering Sunday instead of Mother's Day, because I just find that Mother's Day sounds quite consumer-led, and Mothering Sunday encompasses all of the great and wise women that mother us in all the different ways that they do. So I was thinking that this consumer-led sense of being a mother or Mother's Day is a bit like how we want to choose things in our life: a new car, perfect wedding, a house, maybe 2.4 children. And there is a bit of an expectation that we will become mothers. Lots of people spend a lot of their life trying not to get pregnant, and then when the time comes, a lot of time trying to get pregnant. And we know that it's not always the case that people can have their own children, as many of us are painfully aware. But I thought, turn that question on its head and ask the question again, but through the lens of the child. What does it mean to be mothered? What is their experience of being mothered? So I've said that we've got two birth children, and one looked after child, because we're a fostering family, but actually I'll let you know that our current looked after child is in the process of becoming our adopted child. I think it must be an occupational hazard of fostering that sooner or later you think one of these has to stay forever. But I'm careful with language, so that in our family, when we're talking about the children, I always talk about the big two and the little one, not my children, because that would assume that some are not my children. So while a child needs to be in our family, while they need me to mother them, they are my children, and I love them as such. So we might talk about, you know, the big two having a bath while Tom feeds the little one, or the big two are at a play date and we take the little one to soft play, and so it goes on. We've looked after 11 children so far in the 4 years that we've been fostering, and that's a mixture of short-term, emergency and respite, and I'll try and cover some of that as I chat, and hopefully I'll just tell stories and reveal useful things along the way. Our first one came when she was just 4 months old, and the second was 4 weeks old. Our third, the one that I had to take to the radio station, she came to us when she was just 2 days old, and Isaac came to us when he was a day old. So we've had him from very, very brand new. And each time that we receive one of these children, the gift of a precious child, entrusted to us by God and the local authority, we give thanks for the gift that they are, and we acknowledge the privilege it is to be in their life for however long they need us to be. And it's not just that I want to be a mother, although I do, I love it, and I happen to think it's the most important job that I've done. But it's that they need to be mothered. They need a mother. So what is their experience of being mothered by me? Do they feel unconditional love? Do they feel safe? Do they feel secure? Are they able to thrive and meet their potential? Do they feel accepted and equal to the other children in the home? And I pray regularly that God would equip me, enlarge my heart, build more capacity, and teach me how to love them as he does. From my school days, I had Latin lessons. Probably dates me. It might suggest what kind of school I went to as well. And I performed spectacularly badly in Latin, that they very kindly suggested I should do classics instead of Latin. But I do remember conjugating the verb to love, amo, amas, amat, and so on. And of course, verbs are doing words to love. There's an action involved. So as I change umpteen nappies each day, or feed every 3 hours around the clock, day and night, or provide skin to skin to our newborns, wear our children in slings, rock them, soothe them. I am doing love in a very real and tangible way that they understand and receive. And when we watched that Home for Good video, I loved at the end when the final young man said, "Because of you, I know that I am loved." And I'll dare to say we don't always all fall in love with our children immediately. A traumatic birth, postnatal depression can all play their part. And if I'm honest, there are moments in my household when the children are screaming at each other or just generally being irritants, the feeling that I'm feeling is not love towards them. But we choose to love, loving our kids on purpose. And so just as marriage is a covenant agreement, so too is motherhood. I choose to love all the children in my care, each according to their need. And this often means that our looked after children need more love, more attention, more therapeutic parenting, more parenting with pace, more patience, more physical contact, just more, because of the trauma and the things that they've already gone through. But I have to say, having had the privilege of giving birth to two children and looking after children that I haven't grown myself, I can say very confidently that the way I love them and the emotion that I feel and how I love them is exactly the same. There has never been a time where I felt that I don't love one of our looked after children or an adopted child any less than one that has been born to me. So I would encourage people that are feeling, if they've got a real desire to have birth children and can't, the love that I feel for Isaac is identical to the love that I feel for the other two. So, if thinking about motherhood sounded rather consumer-led, then considering the experience of my mothering through the lens of children I get to share my life with is covenant-led. I choose to love them, and I think if we turn it around and look at not who wants to be a mother, but who is needing a mother, who needs a mother, then, oh my gosh, you know, the blessings and the possibilities are endless. I haven't shared loads of my story of how we came into fostering and adoption, because I hope that I'll get an invitation to come again and do that, and also to unpack some of the theology a bit more. But I'll share a little story which will just give you some context about me. Do you know, I've just realised I meant to bring my phone up and put my timer on, and I forgot to do that. So will somebody just give me a 5-minute warning or something? I want to tell you a story of when I was probably early teens. My sister was very musical, and she would have piano lessons with a lady. And while she was having her piano lesson, I was looking after her three boys. And I loved doing that. I loved being able to mother them just for that short amount of time. And it was a real gift, although it looked like on the surface I was helping her out so that she could give my sister a piano lesson. What it was doing was really helping me. So she gave me that gift of being able to mother and look after her children. She was a lady in our church when I was growing up. Because I was a bit of a nerdy kid, when I was about 16, my best friend and I heard a song called "I Will Speak Out," probably at something like Spring Harvest. And we took it on a tape, which again dates me, to my friend who's very musical. And I played it to her and I said, "We want to sing this song in church." So she listened. She's got such a keen ear. She just listened to it once on this tape and then just got to the piano and played it. So my friend and I sang this song in church, And it's based on Proverbs 31, verses 8 and 9, which talks about speaking out for those who have no voice, speaking out for those who are poor and needy, speaking out for the rights of the oppressed. And that lady is Jane Mortimer. So she has known me since I was about 7, and it was a lovely privilege to look after her boys. And I think there's a reciprocity when we allow people in to help us. They catch something of God's love and compassion for the vulnerable. And so when we make ourselves vulnerable and say, yeah, I need some help, actually, could you do this and look after my children while I do this? Something happens. There's something very beautiful in that. So there's a little bit of story about me, and part of that is I think part of God's plan for our life way back when I was 16 and singing this song about speaking out for those that can't speak for themselves, that I believe is God and already knowing what he wanted for our lives. So who needs a mother? I've just put who needs a mother because it's Mothering Sunday, but of course, children who are in care need fathers too, but we also say that if you're a single carer, you're very welcome as well, because one person loving and caring for a child is better than none. Locally first, 820 children are in care in Worcestershire at the moment, and this number sadly keeps rising. I was talking to somebody yesterday who used to work for the local authority, and he remembers a time when they hit 600 children in care, they would sort of bring in an emergency protocol. And sadly, that's no longer the case. The numbers are, 820 now, and it's not seen as an emergency. It's just normal, which is very sad. Nationally, what does it look like? 90 children a day come into care, or one every 22 minutes. So during the course of this service, 3-4 children, depends how long I speak for, will be taken into care. What about adopters? We've got twice as many children waiting for adoption as there are adopters, and here in the West Midlands that figure is higher, at one adopter to every 4 children. Who waits the longest? On that video there was 3 children, a sibling group, waiting for a family, and they were adopted together, which is wonderful, but the children that wait the longest for a family are sibling groups. Children with a black minority ethnicity, and children with additional needs, and also children over 5. It's really sad to think, but the statistics show that if you're over 5, you are too old to be adopted. Very few people want to adopt a child over 5. Why do these children come into care? What are the reasons that children come into care? I won't go into lots of detail, but the list is there. I'll just tell a couple of stories around some of them. Neglect is the most common reason that children come into care. So it's not that their parents are doing anything, actively negative towards them, but they're not doing anything positive either. Emotional neglect, not feeding them regularly, not changing their nappy regularly. I'll tell you a story of 2 siblings, a baby who was crawling, so probably under a year old, and her brother who was about 8, they were very close together actually, he was probably about 2, 2.5. And when they came to us as an emergency at about 11:30 at night, they came just in little hospital gowns with the little ties at the back, because they came with nothing else, because the clothes that they were wearing when they were removed from their home were too dirty to be put on again. So when they were removed, I think it was a health visitor who went to their home and discovered the squalid home that they were living in. And they were taken to hospital to be checked out, checked that there was no physical abuse. And then when they had finished being at hospital, there's always lots of waiting around the hospital, they were brought to us at 11:30 at night with these little gowns on and nothing else. And so what we have as our kind of network, our support around us, means that people can drop off clothes to us. Say, how old are they? What size clothes are they in? Because at 11:30 at night, we can't always gather everything that we need. And of course, even if we know the age of the children, if we're told by a social worker how old they are, we can't really assume that they'll be in the size clothes that would equate to their age. Often they've been underfed, but also we see a lot that children are overweight because they're being fed a diet that's not appropriate for them. Coca-Cola in a baby bottle, or just fed on fast food. Abuse, all sorts of different types of abuse. Our first little one that came to live with us, sadly suffered with, she, in the 4 months that she had been with her birth family, had sustained, quite a few fractures. But I have to say, and I think this is what I've learned through doing this, I hope that I've grown more compassion for everybody involved. I've never met a birth family that do not love their children. Just because they can't care for their children doesn't mean that they don't care about their children. And even the couple that had harmed our first little one that came to live with us, they absolutely loved her. They had some learning difficulties. They probably hadn't been parented well themselves. There were a lot of reasons why they couldn't keep her safe. But the point where she was told that her daughter would not be able to ever come home to her and would be adopted, the sort of guttural cry that she let out was just horrific and stays with me. So I think it's important just to remember and extend compassion to the birth families. So what can we do about all these bits of information and all the reasons that children come into care? I brought this slide because you can feed me. It's such a powerful image, I think, of sustenance and being sustained. And our church family do sustain us in lots of different ways, but one of the practical ways is food. So I'm getting older, and I'm still often find myself in the newborn season without any of the pregnancy hormones to keep me going through the night. So I really appreciate it when people set up a meal train for us, and in those early weeks and months when I've no idea what day of the week we're on half the time, particularly if we have premature babies that are often needing to be fed every 2 hours, day and night. So food is always a wonderful thing that our church family do for us. And it made me think, it reminded me of hearing Viv Thomas speak. He's an itinerant speaker, and he came and spoke at a church weekend away for us. I have to confess, I can't remember a word of his talk. But in his introduction, he shared how he and his brother had to be taken away from their alcoholic mum when they were about 7 and 9 and went to live with a Christian foster family. And what he said about his desire, what he wanted, was a clean house and a hot meal. And it was just such a basic request. A clean home. My home is reasonable some of the time, usually the day after cleaning day. And we eat hot food every day of the week. So I thought, I can do that. The Old Testament mentions the orphan or fatherless over 42 times. And it just makes me think how high on God's agenda vulnerable children are. Can we open our homes to a vulnerable child? Can we cook meals for somebody that is fostering or adopting? Often people say to me, oh, it's great what you do, but I couldn't do it. I couldn't do what you do. I couldn't give them back. And I know what they mean, and it's a really interesting thought. But sometimes if I'm in a good mood, I'll just smile and go, yeah, I know, yeah. But sometimes I'm thinking inwardly, you know, what does that say about me? Are you suggesting that I don't have any emotions, or I don't feel it when they move on? And I do understand what they mean, that they don't want to open their homes and their hearts because it will hurt too much. But it is hard. It's very hard. But I think that the children that have suffered loss, they've already lost so much and they've experienced trauma and neglect. They need me to love them and invest in them more than I need to protect my own feelings. They need a commitment from me, and they need to feel a sense of belonging. And the support and the scaffolding that I get from my church family at those times of loss and stress have been such a blessing. So we've talked about the meals, babysitting. People that know me well have dropped round a little bottle of Prosecco and chocolates, nappies, baby clothes, equipment, cards, flowers at the end of a placement, all characterise God's love for us and my church's love for us and the support of the church in what we're doing. I can remember when we'd said goodbye to one little one after over a year that she'd lived with us. And our church has steps up to the front door, the main door. So there's another entrance around the back of the church that has a ramped access. And so I was always used to going up the ramp at the back with the pushchair. And on this morning, the first morning that I found myself going to church without our youngest, because she'd moved on to adoption, it caught me out, and I got into church in tears because I didn't want to be able to walk up the steps to my church. I wanted so much to have a pram and have my baby and be able to go the ramped way with her. And we still think about her a lot. In fact, her adoptive mum messaged me this morning, and we still stay in touch, and that's really lovely. But it's wonderful that our church recognises the loss that we feel as foster carers. So we have to love them like they're ours, and then we have to let them go like they're not. We have to put aside our feelings of loss because these children need our love more than we need to protect ourselves from the hurt. But engaging with vulnerability doesn't inoculate us from pain and suffering. It actually invites it in. But there's something beautiful and Christ-like about choosing a path of suffering alongside others for their sake. And I often think that if Jesus were alive today, he'd be sitting in the family courts. There's an awful lot of waiting around in court. And I think he'd be sitting in the family courts with the mothers who are about to hear that their children are being removed and put up for adoption. And I think that's what we hold in tension as fostering families or adoptive families. That tension, that every smile, first smile I get to see, first steps that I get to be involved in, taking a child to school for the first time, the joy and the privilege that is, I hold in tension with knowing that there's a mum out there who's not able to see those firsts. The first time we knew about Isaac, who I think's decided this is far too boring and he's gone again, was before he was born. So we knew that even before he was born, he would be removed and taken into care. And we were anticipating him. We were looking forward to him. This is a new life that is to be celebrated. But whilst we were delighted and excited as a family to meet this new little one, it was shrouded in overwhelming sadness for the mother who just carried her child for 9 months and would be leaving hospital alone. And I cannot imagine the grief and pain that must cause. So therein lies the dilemma, the tension we hold where our delight in receiving a brand new baby to love and cherish for as long as is needed is in sharp relief to the pain and anguish of parents who are left empty. But we need to celebrate these children. We need to celebrate their lives. And what I've learned to do with our churches is to encourage people to go and find a card that says welcome to the world, new baby cards. You can find plenty out there that don't assume that you've pushed the baby out yourself. And so I ask people, I say, can you please send a new baby card? Let's welcome this child into the world. Will you knit, if you're a knitter, knit them something? If your love language is writing a few, you know, scriptures in a card or a small gift. We've got one family and the 8-year-old, she says, I know what to do now, Joy, when you've got a new baby. I go to my pile of soft toys and I choose a new cuddly toy for your new baby. It goes through the wash and that is given to our children. And I love that. I love that people are learning and knowing how best to support us, encourage us, but also sow and speak value into those children's lives. And I think it's so important that our babies are valued, not just babies, babies and young children. I do a memory box for all of them so that when they move on to adoption, they take that with them. And then we know lots of people in their teenage years might struggle with who they are, what their identity is. And I really hope and pray that when they look through their memory box, they'll think, do you know what? I was valued. Someone knitted me that. Someone made me a quilt. Someone bothered to write that card. And those words that we speak into the lives of children, even if we're not able to track with them their whole lives, I believe will be a foundation for them. And in the same way, well, can we go back to the slide that had the party, the children's birthday party? Yes. So this just reminded me when I was looking through photographs. These are looked after children, so I'm sure you wouldn't, but don't take photographs of these slides. But the little one in the red seat, that was her first birthday party. And we invited her friends to come and celebrate with her, just like any other family. And I think that's so important that the church family invest in my children, even though they know it's temporary. So she had her friends come and celebrate her party. And also, the other photograph is Isaac looking a bit scrunched and confused on Christmas morning. The reason I've shown that one is because he's holding, sort of, he's about 8 weeks old there, holding his stocking, which has his name on it, and somebody made it for him. And so these things are really precious and really valuable. We know that not everyone is going to say, adoption is for me, fostering is for me, but everyone can do something to sow into the lives of our vulnerable children. So I think I've talked about what that support looks like for me in our church and what it could look like for you in yours. Now I want to just finish by looking at the wider context, the implication in a wider context for supporting families and supporting social services. I, as head of Home for Good in Worcestershire, go and meet with social services at County Hall quite regularly, and they came to me and said, Joy, what we would love you to do is set up a support group for fostering and adoptive families. They said, we know that our social worker-led support groups aren't that well attended. People don't want to come and share in front of social workers. And they also see the value in churches and church communities. I used to think that people, I'd have to dumb down my faith, but actually they know that children that are placed with Christian families do better. It's probably anecdotal, and they probably don't want to write it down very much, but they know it. And they know that they understand that children have a wider support network around them when they're placed with Christian families. So they asked us to set up a support group, which we have one in Worcester. We have one near Bromsgrove. We would really love to have one in Malvern. And the one that we did, in fact, we did it yesterday. And what happens is we invite people on a Saturday to come and share lunch together, to experience table time, to come as a family. It's 2 hours. They eat together, and then in the second part of the session, the children are looked after by our children's team, and the adults get to chat to one another. And I think just having a place where people can chat and share their struggles or their joys, and know that they're sharing amongst people who understand, is really powerful. We're just facilitating that. We're not doing anything. God does it beautifully. And it happened yesterday, and I could just see different conversations happening, connections being made, tears being shed. But I think it's really beautiful when people can go somewhere where they're safe, and where people understand. And that's what the local authority asked us to set up, and they would love to see more of that. So we do that. We offer our church buildings so that the local authority can deliver training, because they are strapped for cash and they don't often have rooms available at County Hall. We offer ironing, hedge cutting, gardening, DIY. I think actually it's somebody who's got a bit of a penchant for techie equipment, and so he's got an industrial iron and all sorts of other industrial strength bits of equipment. And we get people who will ring and say, I'm feeling overwhelmed in my family, and we know we can't parent people's children for them, but we can do the stuff around the edges that are the things that can overwhelm us when things are tough. So we can iron for people, we can maintain their garden. One social worker rang and said, there's a family in crisis. It's Friday, 5:30. No one's in the office. Can you go round with bread and milk and just sit and have a cup of tea with them? They can't get out the house at the moment because their children are so dysregulated and they've run out of bread and milk. We've offered somebody who's a carpenter who has said that they will help build flat pack furniture for families, or build bunk beds so that foster carers can accommodate siblings and keep siblings together. And if you do become a home for good church, like All Saints is, and lots of others around the county, we're seeing that families are coming to us because they have looked after children, or they are an adoptive family, and they're saying, well, we saw you on the website, and we wanted to come to you because we thought you would understand more the needs of our children, because we can see you're a home for good church. Training for our children's and youth workers, changing our language so that we say, collect your parents and carers, go and collect your children. Understanding a bit about trauma and attachment. So my final slide, I'm really sorry, I probably have gone over. The children that don't get adopted, the children that stay in the care system, they age out. It's a horrible term. They age out of care around 19, and then they're on their own pretty much. They represent 1% of our population, but you can see from the figures that they are hugely overrepresented in our prisons, in our homeless communities, sex workers, teenage mums. So it's only 1% of, they're only 1% of the population, but hugely overrepresented. And I think those numbers are staggering. When Home for Good set up, it was part of Care for the Family and the Evangelical Alliance. And Krish Kandaya realised that the numbers of churches who are signed up and part of the Evangelical Alliance matched with the numbers of children waiting for a home. And he realized that if just one family in every church adopted one of these children, we wouldn't have any children waiting for a forever home. So as God has extended grace and his invitation to us all to be adopted into his family, can we live out that radical hospitality for those who need it most? Can we consider giving a home to a child who needs one, or wrap around and support those families that are doing so?